The previous night came back to Vasya in a rush. Snowdrops at midwinter, bread and apples, mead heavy on her tongue, long white fingers on her face. Pain. She yanked her hand free at the blanket. There was a pale mark in the center of her palm. "That was not a dream either," she murmured. The horse was looking at her in some concern. "Better to believe that everything is real," he said, as if to a lunatic, "and I will tell you if you are dreaming." Vasya laughed. "Done," she said. "I am awake now." She slid out of bed, less painfully than before. Her head was clearing. The house was still as a noonday forest, save the crackle and pop of a good fire. A little pot nestled steaming on the hearth. Suddenly ravenous, Vasya made her way to the fire and found luxury. Porridge and milk and honey. She ate while the stallion hovered. "What is your name?" she said to the horse when she had done. The stallion was busy finishing her bowl. He slanted an ear at her before replying. "I am called Solovey." Vasya smiled. "Nightingale. A little name for a great horse. How did you get it?" "I was foaled at twilight," he said gravely. "Or perhaps I was hatched. I cannot remember. It was long ago. Sometimes I run, and sometimes I remember to fly. And thus am I named." Vasya stared. "But you are not a bird." "You do not know what you are. Can you know what I am?" retorted the horse. "I am called Nightingale. And does it matter why?" Vasya had no answer. Solovey had finished her porridge and put his head up to look at her. He was the loveliest horse she had ever seen. Mish, Buran, Ogon, they were all like sparrows to his falcon. "Last night," Vasya said hesitantly, "last night you said you would let me ride." The stallion neighed. His hooves clattered on the floor. "My dam said I should be patient," he said, "but I am not, usually. Come and ride. I have never been ridden before." Vasya was suddenly dubious, but she replaited her tangled hair and put on her jacket and cloak, mittens and boots, which she found lying near the fire. She followed the horse into the blinding day. The snow lay thick underfoot. Vasya eyed the stallion's tall bare back. She tried her limbs and found them weak as water. The horse stood proudly and expectantly, a horse out of a fairy tale. "I think," said Vasya, "that I'm going to need a stump." The pricked ears flattened.
"A stump?"
"A stump," said Vasya firmly. She made her way to a convenient one, where a tree had cracked and fallen away. The horse poked along behind. He seemed to be reconsidering his choice of rider, but he stood alongside the stump, looking pained, and from there Vasya vaulted gently to his back. All of his muscles went rigid, and he threw his head up. Vasya, who had ridden young horses before, was expecting something of the sort, and she sat still. At last the great stallion blew out a breath. "Very well," he said. "At least you are small." But when he walked off, it was with a mincing, sideways gait. Every few seconds he turned his head to see the girl on his back. They rode all that day. "No," Vasya said for the 10th time. Her night in the snowy forest had left her weaker than she had realized, and it was making a hard task harder. "You must put your head down and use your back. Right now, riding you is like riding a log, a large, slippery log." The stallion put his head round to glare. "I know how to walk." "But not how to carry a person," Vasya retorted. "It is different." "You feel strange," the horse complained. "I can only imagine," said Vasya. "You need not carry me if you do not wish to." The horse said nothing, shaking his black mane. Then, I will carry you. My dam says it grows easier in time. He sounded skeptical. Well, enough of this. Let us see what we can do. And he bolted. Vasya, taken by surprise, threw her weight forward and wrapped her legs around his belly. The stallion careened between the trees. Vasya found herself whooping aloud. He was graceful as a hunting cat and made about as much noise. At speed, they were one. The horse ran like water, and all the white world was theirs. We must go back, said Vasya at length, flushed and panting and laughing. Solovey slow to a trot, his head up, his nostrils showing red. He bucked with sheer high spirits, and Vasya, clinging, hoped he would not have her off. I am tired. The horse pointed an ear at her in a dissatisfied way. He was hardly winded, but he heaved a sigh and turned. In a surprisingly short time, the fir grove lay before them. Vasya slid to the ground. Her feet struck the earth with a great jolt of pain, and she sank gasping to the snow. Her heeled toes were numb, and some hours' ride had not improved her weakness. But where is the house? She said, gritting her teeth and heaving herself to her feet. All she saw was fir trees. Day's end mantled the wood in starry violet. It cannot be found by searching, said Solovey. You must look away just a little. Vasya did, and there, in a quick flash at the edge of her vision, was the hut among the trees. The horse walked beside her, and she was a little ashamed that she needed the support of his warm shoulder. He nudged her through the door. Morozko had not come back, but there was food on the blazing hearth, laid by invisible hands, and something hot and spicy to drink. She dried Solovey with cloths, brushed his bay coat, and combed the long mane. He had never been groomed before either. Foolishness, said the horse when she began. You are tired. It makes not the slightest difference whether I am brushed or not. But he looked vastly pleased with himself regardless, when she took extra care over his tail. He nuzzled her cheek when she had done, and he spent the whole meal inspecting her hair and face and dinner, as if suspecting she'd kept something back. Where do you come from? Vasya asked, when she could hold no more and was feeding the insatiable horse bits of bread. Where were you foaled? Solovey did not reply. He stretched his neck out and crunched an apple in his yellow teeth. Who is your sire? Vasya persisted. Still Solovey said nothing. He stole the remainder of her bread and ambled away, chewing. Vasya sighed and gave up. Vasya and Solovey went out riding together every day for 3 days. Each day the horse bore her more easily, and slowly Vasya's strength returned. When they returned to the house on the third night, Morozko and the white mare were waiting for them. Vasya limped across the threshold, pleased that she could manage it on her own 2 feet, and stopped short seeing them. The mare stood by the fire, licking idly at a chunk of salt. Morozko sat on the other side of the blaze. Vasya slipped off her cloak and approached the oven. Solovey went to his accustomed place and stood expectantly. For a horse that had never been groomed, he adapted very fast. Good evening, Vasilisa Petrovna, said Morozko. Good evening, said Vasya. To her surprise, the frost demon was holding a knife, whittling a block of fine-grained wood. Something like a wooden flower was taking shape under his deft fingers. He laid his knife aside, and the blue eyes touched her here and there. She wondered what he saw. Have my servants been kind to you? Said Morozko. Yes, said Vasya. Very. I thank you for your hospitality. You are welcome. He was silent while she groomed Solovey, though she felt him watching. She rubbed the horse down and combed the snarls from his mane. When she had washed her face and the table was laid, she tore into the food like a young wolf. The table groaned with good things, strange fruits and spiky nuts, cheese and bread and curds. When at last Vasya sat up and slowed down, she caught Morozko's sardonic look. "I was hungry," she said apologetically. "We do not eat so well at home."
"I can well believe it," came the reply. "You looked like a wraith at midwinter."
"Did I?" said Vasya, disgruntled.
"More or less."
Vasya was silent. The fire fell in on its core, and the light in the room went from gold to red.
"Where do you go when you are not here?" she asked.
"Where I like," he said.
"It is winter in the world of men."
"Do you sleep?"
He shook his head.
"Not as you would think of it, no."
Vasya glanced involuntarily at the great bed, with its black frame and blankets heaped like a snowdrift. She bit back the question, but Morozko caught her thought. He raised a delicate eyebrow. Vasya blushed scarlet and took a great draught to hide her burning face. When she looked back at him, he was laughing.
"You need not make that prim face at me, Vasilisa Petrovna," he said. "That bed was made for you by my servants."
"And you," Vasya began. She blushed harder. "You never..."
He had taken up his carving again. He flicked another chip off the wooden flower.
"Often, when the world was young," he said mildly, "they would leave me maidens in the snow."
Vasya shuddered.
"Sometimes they died," he said. "Sometimes they were stubborn or brave, and they did not."
"What happened to them?" said Vasya.
"They went home with the king's ransom," said Morozko dryly. "Have you not heard the tales?"
Vasya, still blushing, opened her mouth and closed it again. Several dozen things she might say rushed through her brain.
"Why?" she managed. "Why did you save my life?"
"It amused me," said Morozko, though he did not look up from his carving.
The flower was crudely finished. He laid aside his knife, picked up a bit of glass or ice, and began to smooth it. Vasya's hand stole up to her face where the frostbite had been.
"Did it?"
He said nothing, but his eyes met hers beyond the fire. She swallowed.
"Why did you save my life and then try to kill me?"
"The brave live," replied Morozko. "The cowards die in the snow. I did not know which you were."
He put down the flower and reached out a hand. His long fingers brushed the place where the wound had been, on her cheek and jaw. When his thumb found her mouth, the breath shivered in her throat.
"Blood is one thing, the sight is another. But courage, that is rarest of all, Vasilisa Petrovna."
The blood flung itself out to Vasya's skin until she could feel every stirring in the air.
"You ask too many questions," said Morozko abruptly, and his hand dropped.
Vasya stared at him, huge-eyed in the firelight.
"It was cruel," she said.
"You will walk a long road," said Morozko. "If you have not the courage to meet it, better. Far better for you to die quiet in the snow. Perhaps I meant you a kindness."
"Not quiet," said Vasya, "and not kind. You hurt me."
He shook his head. He had taken up the carving again.
"That is because you fought," he said. "It does not have to hurt."
She turned away, leaning against Solovey. There was a long silence. Then he said, very low,
"Forgive me, Vasya. Do not be afraid."
She met his eyes squarely.
"I am not."
On the fifth day, Vasya said to Solovey, "Tonight
I am going to plait your mane.
The stallion did not exactly freeze, but she felt all his muscles go rigid.
It does not need plaiting, he said, tossing the mane in question.
The heavy black curtain waved like a woman's hair and fell well past his neck. It was impractical and ridiculously beautiful.
But you'll like it, Vasya coaxed. Won't you like not having it in your eyes?
No, said Solovey, very definitely.
The girl tried again.
You will look the prince of all horses. Your neck is so fine, it should not be hidden.
Solovey tossed his head at this question of looks, but he was a little vain, all stallions are. She felt him waver. She sighed and drooped on his back.
Please.
Oh, very well, said the horse. That night, as soon as the horse was clean and combed, Vasya appropriated a stool and began to plait his mane. With a qualm for the stallion's outraged sensibilities, she abandoned plans for looping braids, curls, or fretworks. Instead, she gathered his long mane into one great feathery plait along his crest, so that his neck seemed to arch more mightily than ever. She was delighted. Surreptitiously, she tried to take a few of the snowdrops that still stood unwithered on the table and braid them in. The stallion pinned his ears.
What are you doing?
Adding flowers, said Vasya guiltily.
Solovey stamped. No flowers!
Vasya, after a struggle with herself, laid them aside with a sigh. Tying off the last trailing end, she paused and stepped back. The braid emphasized the proud arch of the dark neck and the graceful bones of his head. Encouraged, Vasya hauled her stool around to start on the tail. The horse heaved a forlorn sigh.
My tail, too?
You will look the lord of horses when I'm finished, Vasya promised.
Solovey peered about in a futile attempt to see what she was doing.
If you say so.
He seemed to be reconsidering the advantages of grooming. Vasya ignored him, humming to herself, and began to weave the shorter hairs over his tailbone. Suddenly, a cold breeze stirred the tapestries, and the fire leaped in the oven. Solovey pricked his ears. Vasya turned just as the door opened. Morozko passed the threshold, and the white mare nudged her way in after him. The warmth of the house struck steam from her coat. Solovey flicked his tail out of Vasya's grip, nodded in a dignified manner, and ignored his mother. She pointed her ears at his braided mane.
Good evening, Vasilisa Petrovna, said Morozko.
Good evening, said Vasya.
Morozko stripped off his blue outer robe. It slid off his fingertips and disappeared in a puff of powder. He took off his boots, which slid apart, and left a damp patch on the floor. Barefoot, he went to the oven. The white mare followed. He picked up a twist of straw and began to rub her down. In the space of a blink, the twist of straw became a brush of boar's hair. The mare stood with her ears flopping, loose-lipped with enjoyment. Vasya went nearer, fascinated.
Did you change the straw? Was that magic?
As you see, he went on with his grooming.
Can you tell me how you do it?
She came up beside him and peered eagerly at the brush in his hand.
You are too attached to things as they are, said Morozko, combing the mare's withers.
He glanced down idly.
You must allow things to be what best suits your purpose, and then they will.
Vasya, puzzled, made no reply. Solovey snorted, not about to be left out. Vasya picked up her own straw and started on the horse's neck. No matter how hard she stared at it, though, it remained straw.
You can't change it to a brush, said Morozko, seeing her, because that would be to believe it is now straw. Just allow it now to be a brush.
Disgruntled,
Vasya glowered into Solovey's flank.
I don't understand.
Nothing changes, Vasya. Things are, or they are not. Magic is forgetting that something ever was other than as you willed it.
I still do not understand.
That does not mean you cannot learn.
I think you are making a game of me.
As you like, said Morozko, but he smiled when he said it. That night, when the food had gone and the fire burned red, Vasya said,
You once promised me a tale.
Morozko drank deep of his cup before replying,
Which tale, Vasilisa Petrovna?
I know many.
You know which?
The tale of your brother and your enemy.
I did promise you that tale, said Morozko reluctantly.
Twice I have seen the twisted oak tree, said Vasya. Four times since childhood have I seen the one-eyed man, and I have seen the dead walking. Did you think I'd ask for any other tale?
Drink then, Vasilisa Petrovna.
Morozko's soft voice slid through her veins with the wine. And listen. He poured out the mead, and she drank. He looked older and stranger, and very far away.
I am death, said Morozko slowly. Now, as in the beginning. Long ago, I was born of the minds of men, but I was not born alone. When first I looked upon the stars, my brother stood beside me, my twin. And when first I saw the stars, so did he.
The quiet, crystalline words dropped into Vasya's mind, and she saw the heavens making wheels of fire in shapes she did not know, and a snowy plain that kissed a bitter horizon, blue on black.
I had the face of a man, said Morozko, but my brother had the face of a bear. For to men, a bear is very fearsome.
That is my brother's part. He makes men afraid. He eats their fear, gorges himself, and sleeps until he hungers again.
This order he loves above all. War and plague and fire in the night.
But in the long ago, I bound him. I am death and guardian of the order of things. All passes before me. That is how it is.
If you bound him, then how?
I bound my brother, said Morozko, not raising his voice. I am his warden, his guardian. His jailer.
Sometimes he wakes, and sometimes he sleeps. He is a bear, after all.
But now he is awake, and stronger than he has ever been. So strong that he is breaking free. He cannot leave the forest, not yet. But already he has left the shadow of the oak tree, which he has not done for 100 lives of men.
Your people grew afraid. They abandoned the Cherti, and now your house is unprotected.
Already he satisfies his hunger with you. He kills your people in the night. He makes the dead walk.
Vasya was silent a moment, absorbing this.
How may he be defeated?
By trickery sometimes, Morozko said. Long ago I defeated him with strength, but I had others to help me then. Now I am alone, and I have faded.
There was a small silence.
But he is not free yet. To break free entirely, he needs lives, several lives, and the fear of the tormented dead. The lives of those who can see him are the strongest of all. If he had taken you in the woods the night we met, then he would have been free, though all the powers of the world were ranged against him.
How may he be bound anew, said Vasya with a touch of impatience.
Morozko half smiled.
I have one last trick.
Was it her imagination, or did his eyes linger on her face?
Her talisman hung heavy on her throat.
I will bind him at midwinter when I am strongest.
I can help you.
Can you? Morosko said with faint amusement. A girl child, half-blooded and untrained? You know nothing of lore or battle or magic. How exactly can you help me, Vasilisa Petrovna?
I kept the Domovoy alive, Vasya protested. I kept the Upiri for my hearth.
Well done, said Morosko. One newborn Upir slain in daylight, one pallid little Domovoy clinging to life, and the girl who fled like a fool into the snow.
Vasya swallowed. I have a talisman, she said. My nurse gave it to me, from my father. It helped on the nights the Upiri came. It might help again.
She lifted the sapphire from beneath her tunic. It was cold and heavy in her hand. When she turned it in the firelight, the silver-blue jewel blazed up with a six-pointed star. Was it her imagination, or was his face a shade paler? His lips tightened, and his eyes were deep and colorless as water.
A little talisman, said Morosko. An old, frail magic to shield a girl child. A paltry thing to set before the bear.
But his glance lingered on it. Vasya did not see. She let the necklace go. She leaned forward.
All my life, she said, I have been told, go, and come. I am told how I will live. I am told how I must die. I must be a manservant and a mare for his pleasure, or I must hide myself behind walls and surrender my flesh to a cold, silent god. I would walk into the jaws of hell itself if it were a path of my own choosing. I would rather die tomorrow in the forest than live 100 years of the life appointed me. Please, please, let me help you.
For an instant, Morosko seemed to hesitate.
Didn't you hear me? He said at last. If the bear has your life, well, then he will be free, and there is nothing I can do. Better you stay far away from him. You are only a maiden. Go home where you are safe. That will help me. That is best. Wear your jewel. Do not go to a convent.
She did not see the harshness about his mouth. There will be a man to marry you. I will make sure of it. I will give you your dowry, a prince's ransom, as the tale prescribes. Will you like that? Gold on your wrists and throat, the finest dowry in all Rus?
Vasya suddenly stood, sending her stool crashing to the floor. She could not summon words. She ran out into the night, barefoot and bareheaded. Solovey glared at Morosko and followed. The house was left in silence except for the crackling of the fire.
That was ill done, said the mayor. Was I wrong? Said Morosko. She is better off at home.
Her brother will protect her. The bear will be bound. There will be a man to marry her, and she will live in safety. She must carry the jewel. She must live long and remember. I will not have her risk her life. You know what is at stake.
Then you deny what she is. She will wither.
She is young. She will suit herself to it.
The mayor said nothing. Vasya did not know how long she rode. Solovey had followed her into the snow, and blindly she clambered onto his back. She'd have ridden forever. But at length, the horse returned her to the fir grove. The house among the firs wavered in her sight. Solovey shook his mane.
Get off, he said. There is fire there. You are cold. You are weary. You are frightened.
I am not frightened, snapped Vasya. But she slid from the horse's back. She flinched when her feet struck the snow.
Hobbling, she brushed between the firs and stumbled over the familiar threshold. The fire leaped high in the oven. Vasya stripped off her wet outer things, not noticing the silent servants that took them away. Somehow, she made her way to the fire. She sank into her chair. Morozko and the white mare had gone. At last, she drank a cup of mead and dozed off with her chilled toes near the oven. The fire burned down, but the girl slept on. In the darkest part of the night, she dreamed. She was in Constantine's cell. The air reeked with earth and blood, and a monster crouched over the priest's thrashing body. When it raised its face, Vasya saw its lips and chin all covered in gore. She raised a hand to banish it, and it shrieked and sprang through the window and disappeared. Vasya knelt beside the bed, scrabbling at the torn blankets. But the face between her hands was not that of Father Constantine. Alyosha's dead gray eyes stared up at her. Vasya heard a snarl and turned. The upir had returned, and it was Dunya. Dunya dead, staggering halfway through the window, her mouth a gaping hole, the bone showing in her finger ends. Dunya, who had been her mother. And then the shadows on the priest's wall became one shadow, a one-eyed shadow that laughed at her. "Weep," it said. "You are frightened. It is delicious." All the icons in the corner came alive and screeched their approbation. The shadow opened its mouth to laugh, too, and then it was not a shadow at all, but a bear, a great bear with famine between its teeth. It roared out flame, and then the wall was burning, her house was burning. Somewhere, she heard Irina screaming. A grinning face showed between the flames, mottled blue, with a great dark hole where an eye should have been. "Come," it said. "You will be with them, and you will live forever." Her dead brother and sister stood beside this apparition and seemed to beckon from behind the flames. Something hard struck Vasya across the face, but she did not heed. She reached out a hand. "Alyosha," she said. "Lyoshka." But a quick pain came, sharper than before. Vasya was yanked out of the dream, strangling on a sound between a sob and a scream. Solovey was butting her anxiously with his nose. He had bitten her upper arm. She seized his warm mane. Her hands were like two lumps of ice, her teeth chattered. She buried her face in his coat. Her head was full of screaming and that laughing voice. "Come, or you will never see them again." Then she heard another voice, felt a rush of frigid air. "Get back, you great ox." There was a squeal of indignation from Solovey, and then there were cold hands on Vasya's face. When she tried to look, all she could see was her father's house burning and a one-eyed man that beckoned. "Forget him," said the one-eyed man. "Come here." Morozko struck her across the face. "Vasya," he said. "Vasilisa Petrovna. Look at me." It was like dragging herself across a great distance, but his eyes came into focus at last. She could not see the house in the woods. All she saw were fir trees, snow, horses, and the night sky. The air curled frigid about her. Vasya tried to quiet her panicked breaths. Morozko hissed out something she did not understand. Then, "Here," he said. "Drink." There was mead at her lips. She smelled the honey. She swallowed, choked, and drank. When she raised her head, the cup was empty and her breathing had slowed. She could see the walls of the house again, though they wavered at the edges. Solovey was thrusting his great head down to hers, lipping at her hair and face. She laughed weakly. "I'm all right," she began, but her laughter became tears, and she was seized with a storm of weeping. She covered her face. Morozko watched her, narrow-eyed. She could still feel the imprint of his hands, and one cheek throbbed where he had struck her. At length her tears slowed. "I had a nightmare," she said. She would not look at him. She hunched on her chair, cold and embarrassed, sticky with tears. "Do not look so," Morozko said. "It was more than a nightmare. It was my own mistake."
Seeing her shiver, he made a sound of impatience. Come here to me, Vasya. When she hesitated, he added shortly, I will not hurt you, child, and it will quiet you. Come here. Bewildered, she uncurled and stood, fighting back fresh tears. He put a cloak round her. She did not know where he had gotten it from, perhaps conjured from midair. He picked her up and sank onto the warm oven bench with her in his arms. He was gentle. His breath was the winter wind, but his flesh was warm, and his heart beat under her hand. She wanted to pull away, to glare at him with all her pride, but she was cold and frightened. Her pulse throbbed in her ears. Clumsily, she settled her head in the curve of his shoulder. He ran his fingers through her loosened hair. Slowly, her trembling eased. I'm all right now, she said, after a time, a little unsteady. What did you mean, your own mistake? She felt, rather than heard him laugh. Medved is a master of nightmares. Anger and fear are as meat and drink to him, and so he captures the minds of men. Forgive me, Vasya. Vasya said nothing. After a moment, he said, Tell me your dream. Vasya told him. She was shaking again when she had done, and he held her and was silent. You were right, said Vasya at length. What do I know of ancient magic, or ancient rivalries, or anything else? But I must go home. I can protect my family, at least for a time. Father and Alyosha will understand when I have explained. The image of her dead brother tore at her. Very well, said Morozko. She was not looking at him, and so she did not see his face grim. May I take Solovey with me? Said Vasya hesitantly. If he wishes to come? Solovey heard and shook his mane. He put his head down to look at Vasya out of one eye. Where you go, I go, said the stallion. Thank you, Vasya whispered and stroked his nose. Tomorrow you will go, Morozko broke in. Sleep the rest of the night. Why? Said Vasya, pulling away to look at him. If the bear is waiting in my dreams, I certainly will not sleep. Morozko smiled crookedly. But I will be here this time. Even in your dreams, Medved would not have dared my house if I had not been away. How did you know I was dreaming? Asked Vasya. How did you come back in time? Morozko raised an eyebrow. I knew, and I came back in time because there is nothing beneath the stars that runs faster than the white mare. Vasya opened her mouth on another question, but exhaustion hit her like a wave. She yanked back from the brink of sleep, suddenly frightened. No, she whispered. Don't. I could not bear it again. You will not come back, returned Morozko. His voice was steady against her ear. She felt the years in him and the strength. All will be well. Don't go, she whispered. Something crossed his face that she could not read. I will not, he said. And then it did not matter. Sleep was a great dark wave, and it washed over her and through her. Her eyelids fluttered closed. Sleep is cousin to death, Vasya, he murmured over her head. And both are mine. He was still there when she woke, as he had promised. She crawled from her bed and went to the fire. He sat very still, staring into the flames. It was as though he hadn't moved at all. If Vasya looked hard, she could see the forest around him, and he a great white silence, formless in the middle. But then she sank onto her own stool, and he looked round, and some of the remoteness left his face. Where did you go yesterday? She asked him. Where were you, when the bear knew you were far away? Here and there, replied Morozko. I brought gifts for you. A heap of bundles lay beside the fire. Vasya glanced at them. He lifted an eyebrow in invitation, and she was child enough to go immediately to the first bundle and pull it open, heart beating quickly. It contained a green dress trimmed in scarlet and a sable-lined cloak. There were boots made of felt and fur, embroidered with crimson berries. There were headdresses for her hair and jewels for her fingers, many jewels. Vasya hefted them in her hand. There was gold and silver in saddlebags of heavy leather. There was cloth of silver and a rich, soft cloth that she did not know. Vasya looked them all over. "I am the girl in the story," she thought. "This is the prince's ransom. Now he will take me back to my father's house, covered with gifts." She remembered his hands in the night, a few moments of gentleness. "No, that was nothing. That is not how the story goes. I am only the girl in the fairy tale, and he the wicked frost demon. The maiden leaves the forest, marries a handsome man, and forgets all about magic." Why did she feel this pain? She laid the cloth aside. "Is this my dowry?" Her voice was soft. She did not know what showed on her face. "You must have one," said Morozko. "Not from you," whispered Vasya. She saw him taken aback. "I will bring your snowdrops to my stepmother. Solovey will come to Lesnaya Zemlya with me if he wishes, but I will have nothing else from you, Morozko." "You will have nothing of me, Vasya," said Morozko, and for once she heard a human voice. Vasya stumbled backward, tripping on the prince's ransom scattered at her feet. "Nothing." She knew he knew she was crying, and she tried to speak reasonably. "Bind your brother and save us. I am going home." Her cloak hung by the fire. She put on her boots and caught up the basket of snowdrops. Part of her wanted him to object, but he did not. "You will cross the barrier of your village at dawn then," said Morozko. He was on his feet. He paused. "Believe in me, Vasya. Do not forget me." But she was already over the threshold and away. Chapter 26. At the Thaw. "She is only one poor mad fool," thought Konstantin Nikonovich. "He said he will not kill her. I must get him to leave me. No one can know of this." Gray dawn and a red sun rising. Where is the border he spoke of? In the forest. Snowdrops. The old oak before dawn. Konstantin crept to Anna's chamber and touched her shoulder. Her daughter slept beside her, but Irina did not stir. He put a hand to Anna's mouth to muffle her shriek. "Come with me now," he said. "God has called us." He caught her with his eyes. She lay still, her mouth gaping. He kissed her on the forehead. "Come," he said. She stared up at him with wide eyes, suddenly brimming with tears. "Yes," she said. She followed him like a dog. He had been prepared to whisper, to speak foolishness, but all it took was one glance, and she followed him. It was dark, but the eastern sky had lightened. It was very cold. He put her cloak round her and led her from the house. It was months since Anna had gone out of doors, even in daylight, but now she followed him with only a slight quickening of her ragged breaths as they crossed the barrier of the village. They came to an old oak just a little way into the forest. Konstantin had never seen it before. All around them was winter, the shroud of bitter snow, the earth like iron, the river like blue marble. But beneath the oak, the snow had melted, and, Konstantin stepped closer, the ground was thick with snowdrops.
Anna clutched at his arm. "Father," she whispered. "Oh, Father, what are those there? It is still winter. Too soon for snowdrops."
"The thaw," said Constantine, weary, sick, and certain.
"Come, Anna." She wound her hand in his. Her touch was like a child's. In the dawn light, he could see the black gaps between her teeth. Constantine drew her nearer the tree, with its carpet of untimely snowdrops. Nearer and nearer. And suddenly, they were in a clearing that neither of them had ever seen. The oak stood alone in the center, while the white flowers clustered about its hoary knees. The sky was white. The ground was slush, turning to muck.
"Well done," said the voice.
It seemed to come from the air, from the water. Anna let out a sobbing scream. Constantine saw a shadow on the snow, grown monstrously vast, flung out long and distorted, the blackest shadow that he had ever seen. But Anna looked not at the shadow, but at the air beyond. She pointed one trembling finger and screamed. She screamed and screamed. Constantine looked where Anna looked, but he saw nothing. The shadow seemed to stretch out and quiver like a dog at its master's stroking. Anna's scream split the blank air. The light was flat and dim.
"Well done, my servant," said the shadow. "She is all I could desire. She can see me, and she is afraid. Scream, Viedma, scream."
Constantine felt empty, strangely calm. He put Anna away from him, though she clawed and scrabbled. Her nails dug into his wool-clad arm.
"Now," said Constantine, "keep your promise. Leave me. Send the girl back."
The shadow went still, like the boar that hears the hunter's distant footfall.
"Go home, man of God," it said. "Go back and wait. The girl will come to you. I swear it."
Anna's terrified screams grew even louder. She flung herself to the ground and kissed the priest's feet, wrapped her arms around him.
"Batyushka," she begged. "Batyushka! No, please, do not leave me. I beg, that is a devil."
"That is the devil."
Constantine was filled with a weary disgust.
"Very well," he said to the shadow.
He pushed Anna aside.
"I advise you to pray."
She sobbed harder still.
"I am going," said Constantine to the shadow. "I will wait. Do not forsake your word."
Chapter 27. The Winter Bear. Vasya came back to Lesnaya Zemlya at first light of a clear winter dawn. Soloveï carried her to the part of the palisade nearest the house. When she stood on his back, she could reach the top of the spiked wall.
"I will wait for you, Vasya," said the stallion. "If you need me, you have only to call."
Vasya laid a hand on his neck. Then she vaulted the palisade and dropped into the snow. She found Alyosha alone in the winter kitchen, armed and pacing, cloaked and booted. He saw her and stopped dead. Brother and sister stared at each other. Then Alyosha took two strides, seized her and pulled her to him.
"God, Vasya, you frightened me," he said into her hair. "I thought you were dead. Damn Anna Ivanovna and Upiri both. I was going to go and look for you. What happened? You, You don't even look cold.
He pushed her away a little.
You look different.
Vasya thought of the house in the woods, of the good food and rest and warmth. She thought of her endless rides through the snow, and she thought of Morozko, the way he watched her over the fire in the evening.
Perhaps I am different.
She flung down the flowers.
Alyosha gaped.
Where? He stammered.
How?
Vasya smiled crookedly.
A gift, she said.
Alyosha reached out and touched a fragile stem. It won't work, Vasya, he said, recovering. Anna will not keep her promise. The village is already fearful. If word of these gets out,
we'll not tell them, said Vasya firmly.
It is enough I kept my half of the bargain. At midwinter, the dead will lie quiet again. Father will come home, and you and I will make him see sense. In the meantime, there is the house to guard. She turned toward the oven. At that moment, Irina came stumbling into the room. She gave a cry.
Vasochka, you are back! I was so afraid!
She flung her arms around Vasya, and Vasya stroked her sister's hair. Irina pulled away.
But where is mother? She said.
She was not in bed, though usually she sleeps so long. I thought she would be in the kitchen.
A cold finger touched Vasya on the back of her neck, though she was not sure why.
Perhaps in the church, little bird, she said. I will go and see.
In the meantime, here are some flowers for you. Irina seized the blossoms, pressed them to her lips.
So soon! Is it spring already, Vasochka?
No, replied Vasya. They are a promise only. Keep them hidden. I must go find your mother. There was no one in the church but Father Constantine. Vasya walked soft in the stillness. The icons seemed to peer at her.
You, said Constantine wearily. He kept his promise.
He did not look away from the icons. Vasya stepped around him so that she stood between him and the icon screen. A low fire burned in his sunken eyes.
I gave everything for you, Vasilisa Petrovna.
Not everything, said Vasya, since clearly your pride is intact, as well as your illusions. Where is my stepmother, Batyushka?
No, I gave everything, said Constantine.
His voice rose. He seemed to speak despite himself. I thought the voice was God, but it was not, and I was left with my sin, that I wanted you. I listened to the devil to get you away from me. Now I will never be clean again.
Batyushka, said Vasya, what is this devil?
The voice in the dark, said Constantine, the bringer of storms, the shadow on the snow. But he told me... Constantine covered his face with his hands. His shoulders shook. Vasya knelt and peeled the priest's hands from his face.
Batyushka, where is Anna Ivanovna?
In the woods, said Constantine. He was staring into her face as though fascinated, much as Alyosha had. Vasya wondered what change the house in the woods had wrought in her.
With the shadow, the price of my sins.
Batyushka, said Vasya, very carefully.
In these woods, did you see a great oak tree, black and twisted?
Of course you would know the place, said Constantine. It is the haunt of demons.
Then he started.
All the color had fled from Vasya's face.
What girl?
he said with something of his old imperious manner. You cannot mourn that mad old woman. She would have seen you dead.
But Vasya was gone already, up and running for the house. The door slammed shut behind her. She had remembered her stepmother staring, bulging-eyed, at the domovoy. He desires above all the lives of those who can see him. The bear had his witch, and it was done. She put two fingers in her mouth and whistled shrilly. Already smoke trickled from chimneys. Her whistle split the morning like the arrows of raiders, and people spilled out of their houses.
Vasya, she heard. Vasilisa Petrovna.
But then they all fell silent, for Solovey had leaped the palisade. He galloped up to Vasya, and he did not break stride when she vaulted to his back. She heard cries of astonishment. The horse skidded to a halt in the dvor. From the stable came the neighing of horses. Alyosha came running out of the house, naked sword in hand. Irina behind him hovered flinching in the doorway. They stopped and stared at Solovey.
Lyoshka, come with me, said Vasya. Now, there is no time.
Alyosha looked at his sister and the bay stallion. He looked at Irina and he looked at the people.
Will you carry him as well? Said Vasya to Solovey.
Yes, said Solovey, if you ask it of me. But where are we going, Vasya?
To the oak tree, to the bear's clearing, said Vasya, as fast as you can run.
Alyosha, without a word, sprang up behind her. Solovey put his head up, a stallion scenting battle. But he said,
You cannot do it alone. Morozko is far away.
He has said he must wait until midwinter.
Cannot? Said Vasya.
I will do it. Hurry!
Anna Ivanovna had no more voice. The cords and muscles were all wrenched and broken. Still, she tried to scream, though only a ruined rasp escaped her lips. The one-eyed man sat beside her where she lay on the earth and smiled.
Oh, my beauty, he said. Scream again. It is beautiful. Your soul ripens as you scream.
He bent nearer. One instant she saw a man with twisted blue scars on his face. Next instant, arcing over her, she saw a grinning one-eyed bear whose head and shoulders seemed to shatter the sky. Then he was nothing at all. A storm, a wind, a summer wildfire, a shadow. She cringed away, retching. She tried to stumble to her feet, but the creature grinned down at her, and the strength went from her limbs. She lay there, breathing the stinking air.
You are glorious, said the creature, bending nearer, slavering.
He ran hard hands over her flesh. Crouched at his feet was another shape, white-wrapped, small. The face had shrunk to almost nothing, just close-set eyes and narrow temples and a mouth that gaped huge and ravenous. It crouched on the ground, head between its knees. Every now and then it looked at Anna, a light of hunger gleaming in the dark eyes.
Dunya,
said Anna, sobbing, for it was she, dressed as they'd buried her.
Dunya, please.
But Dunya said nothing. She opened her cavernous mouth.
Die, said Medved with rapt tenderness, letting Anna go and stepping back. Die and live forever.
The upir lunged. Anna resisted only with feeble, scratching fingers. But then, from the other side of the clearing, came the ringing cry of a stallion. As Solovey galloped, Vasya told Alyosha that a monster had their stepmother, and if it killed her,
It would be free to burn up the countryside with terror.
Vasya, said Alyosha, taking a moment to digest this. Where were you?
I was